Vincent, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us here. Now, you've been looking at this ideas behind media reforms, and one of the key ideas in an article you've recently written is that our political class has been captive to the interests of big media to the detriment of the Australian public. Could you possibly take us through that one?
Certainly. And in this case, one can take two different roads. You can say that on one hand, politicians genuinely believe that what they do is in the best interests of the nation, but of course their judgment is biased or is swayed by the company they keep, the political aspirations of their group and things like that. If you want to be really cynical, and Australia's getting increasingly cynical about its politicians, and that's, I don't think, a very, very good thing, is to say that the politicians frequently make judgments about what legislation should do, and I have in particular mind the media at this moment, based on what will be best for their party in the medium to short term, rather than what's best for the audiences. Now, I'm not going to make a judgment between those two, but I must say that looking back at 105, 106 years of media regulation in Australia, going back to the wonderfully titled Wireless Telegraphy Act of 1905, the judgments made by our political class, and particularly our politicians in introducing laws and amendments to those laws to regulate the media, seem unusually biased in favour of those who run the media. And that is a fairly, it's not exclusively so, you know, some really thoughtful and I think in the long term good for Australia judgments have been made, like the creation of the ABC, although it has plenty of critics now. It had a really important role in its early days, and that is to speak with one voice to all Australia, so that we had some sense of national character, national unity. But more recent decisions really don't really show that much wisdom, and in general capitulate towards the interests of the proprietors. So that's a background. You know, the deep reasons for this I'm not going to go into. I just simply observe that media regulation favours the proprietors over the audiences.
Well, actually, that's quite an intriguing point you bring up, because notwithstanding this favourable legislative framework, at the moment, big media is still losing quite a lot of money. Are they going to turn around and go, well, this supportive framework wasn't so supportive after all? We need certain protections and certain flexibilities.
Yes, indeed. The commercial TV stations, which of course are dependent on advertising revenues, they're earning in 2014 adjusted numbers about what they were doing 10 years ago. So there has been no growth in their revenue base over 10 years, and that revenue base is increasingly threatened by things like pay TV, Foxtel, and by the subscription services such as Netflix and so forth. The threat from those, I think, is at the present at least overestimated, because all those services, except for Foxtel, which can be delivered on a dedicated network to your home, all those others rely upon fast broadband communication for their delivery. And at present, most Australians don't have that facility. Nevertheless, if the NBN, or I should say when the NBN, because I'm confident it's going to be completed, when the NBN reaches the 90% of Australians it does via terrestrial circuits, either fibre optic or fibre to the node and the twisted copper pair to your home, or by local radiated wireless networks and things like that, and the other 7 or 8% of Australia gets it off the satellite, then that becomes a real serious risk. So in a way, commercial television at the present is looking to the future, trying to secure at least a continuing revenue base rather than seeing it increasingly eroded. And they're arguing that these changes will make those things better. This was generally supported by a campaign that the rural and regional stations ran called Save Our Voices, which I'm afraid I have been particularly critical of, because it actually managed to avoid some of the key issues in its advertising. And as far as I can see, given these changes when they go through Parliament, and that's increasingly unlikely before the budget, it will in fact deprive them of voices in the country rather than save them. On the other hand, it will probably boost the share price of our regional stations, which have in general or at least for things like Prime, has been slowly collapsing over the last 4 or 5 years.
Now, Vincent, I will admit to perhaps a little bit of the cynicism you mentioned earlier. Don't always try to be, but can be a little bit cynical at times. But do you think there's much to differentiate the current media policies of the coalition and the opposition at the moment?
I'm trying to find out the answer to that question, but having a great deal of difficulty. I've also tried to get an answer out of the Greens. Senator Ludlam has normally been outspoken on many issues to do with the media, but telephone calls and emails to his office have not yet yielded any message from the Greens concerning their position on these matters. But I don't think there will be any great deal of difference. It worries me that Senator Fifield, the ever-cheery Senator Fifield, I must say he's always smiling, does not seem to be grasping some of the dimensions to the issue, because whilst the stations are certainly not doing terribly well financially, on the other hand, they have a role in what I call the information or the political information economy. Television, radio, newspapers in particular, all deliver aspects of news about our communities to us. The community can be local, it can be statewide, it can be national. And that the likelihood that these changes will mean that the city stations, the metropolitan networks, will take over the country networks, will mean there will be half the number of newsrooms reporting Australia to Australians.
Mm.
Now, that does not do diversity much good. Some people have argued, in fact, one of the comments on the article I wrote for The Conversation suggests that these changes is the only way of assuring any news in the country rather than the present diversity. And to an extent, that comment is true, that if the rural stations, the rural and regional stations, don't have money, then they can't make news because news is expensive. On the other hand, the city networks with which they are affiliated are really rinsing the dollars out of them through the affiliation fees, so that if the affiliation fees were more market competitive rather than a matter of private negotiation, then maybe we'd have a difference, because for $48 million, which is what Nine wants from Wynn, you can run an awful lot of newsrooms.
Mm. Now, as you've mentioned there, it seems pretty much inevitable that the internet will be the dominant force in media. Obviously, we could unpack that in terms of the 2 out of 3 media laws, but that could take us a while. Just looking at this context of the internet becoming this dominant service, TV and print, how are they going to innovate and not fade into oblivion? And how can the government actually do anything to improve that situation for the diversity of voices?
Well, first of all, I think we've got to think about the internet as being another carrier, equivalent to, it's a parallel universe in a sense to the radio frequency spectrum that the free-to-air broadcasters use. If we see it simply as a carriage mechanism for carrying messages, ideas, programs from program producers rather than a holy grail in its own right, we get somewhere. Because at the present, the internet and the services that use it are really terrific at recycling news. There's not a lot of original news being written for the internet. There are some wonderful internet spoof sites, and I'm thinking of places like the Batuta Times or Batuta Advocate, which is totally spoof. It's absolutely wonderful, but it's got absolutely nothing to do with news. So that the amount of the journalistic eyeballs looking at our stories and then writing them up for whatever media are mostly working in radio, television, and newsprint. The sources that you get on the internet are largely recycling that, and of course, the internet is absolutely pluperfect for opinion, because the internet is awash with opinion, much of it ill-informed, some of it downright misleading. So that seeing the internet as a source of news, I think, is to fail to understand the present nature and the likely future of the internet. I'm very keen on the idea of diversity of the voices in Australia. I'm also very keen on the importance of local news to our communities outside the big cities, because their character, their individuality, their identity is very much tied up to local news services and local programming. And that if, for example, back in the 1990s, when the federal government, the Commonwealth government rather, decided to aggregate these what formerly solo or soulless license areas in the country, each of which had a monopoly commercial station, there was an opportunity for granting further licenses in the country, but instead the government decided in favour of the existing broadcasters, and one must say that part of that was very strongly supported by probably the most important character of the time in Australian television, Kerry Packer, who I worked for a while. I have, at a professional level, a great deal of respect for him, but I would never want to have him as a friend. But he knew his audience, he knew television, and he knew how to lobby politicians, and mostly he got his own way.
Mm.
And part of his own way was this aggregation, where the country stations would be able to move into their neighbour's territory, so that each licensed area in general would have two new licensees who were existing licensees. It was within the gift of the government to grant new licences. And in fact, a Hobart entrepreneur named Peter Hookway, I should say the late Peter Hookway, bought the Tasmanian Film Corporation exactly so he had the only other television production facility in Tasmania, in southern Tasmania, so that there was the chance there to bring new blood, new money, and new ideas into commercial television in the country, but the government passed on that. And I think that was one of the great losses we've had in regulation over the last few decades.
Mm. Well, Vincent, thank you very much. Do appreciate your insight into this one this morning.
My pleasure, Sean.
You have a very good day.